I allow myself to imagine him being trampled to death by a herd of stampeding bulls, and then I let it go. But not before feeling the tiniest bit better. "So what are you saying we should do?" I ask. "Go over there and confront him?" Grace thinks for a moment. Then she sinks back into her chair. "No. No, I don't want to upset Chloe or embarrass him. I'll figure something out." Kat reaches for her hand. The two of them exchange a fierce, determined Amazon warrior look that I really hope I'm never the subject of. I'm starting to get the feeling I'd better keep all my ducks in a row, or I'll get my ass kicked 6 ways to Sunday by 3 best girlfriends. Which is all kinds of awesome. Nico catches my eye and grins. I duck my head and hide my smile by rubbing my hand over my jaw. "All right, we've loitered long enough. We'll let you two squirrels get back to collecting nuts." Nico stands, and so do the rest of us. "Dude, what is it with you and the squirrel comparisons? Do we look like a couple of rodents?" Gray says, "It's because they're so cute, right?" Kat wrinkles her nose. "They carry the plague." Nico says, "Really? I thought rats carried the plague." Barney chimes in helpfully. "They do, and so do squirrels, rabbits, and camels." Everyone looks at him. He shrugs, tapping his temple. "Got a lot of useless trivia up here. If you ever need to know which product was the first to have a barcode, I'm your man." Gray says, "That's easy. Wrigley's gum." Barney looks surprised. "Correct. How did you know that?" She answers, "The same way I know how many cars and lampposts are on the back of a $10 bill. Barney replies instantly, 4 and 11. Grace grins. "Winston Churchill was born in a ladies' room during a dance." Super cocky, Barney shoots back, "A cat has 32 muscles in each ear." Now I'm starting to get nervous. I blurt, "Al Capone's business card said he was a used furniture dealer." Grace turns to me, grinning even wider. "Oh yeah? Well, elephants are the only land mammals that can't jump." "I thought white men were the only land mammals that couldn't jump," says Kat, and everyone starts to laugh. Thank God, because I'm only just beginning to get my feet wet with this whole no jealousy exercise, and listening to Grace and Barney play Trivial Pursuit almost gave me a heart attack. I know she wouldn't like it, but the possessiveness I feel for her tells me unequivocally how serious I am. She's mine. I mean, I know she's not mine. I'm a liberated guy. She's her own person. Nobody owns anyone. That's not what I'm saying. Oh, fuck it. Who am I kidding? I'm saying she's mine, and I'll pound any motherfucker who tries to get between us. Grace looks at me. You okay? Yep. Why? Because you just let out this weird little grunt. My cheeks go hot. Jesus, I'm falling apart over here. Get it together, Brody. Embarrassed because everyone is now staring at me, I ask sheepishly, is it okay if we talk about it later? She gets it. I can tell by the way her eyes go all soft and how she smiles at me, secretly pleased. Sure. She reaches out and clasps my hand. I raise her hand to my lips and kiss it. Nico says, anything else you need, darling, just let us know, yeah? Thank you, Nico. Grace turns her warm gaze to Kat. Her voice lowered, she says, you too, Dramarama. Thanks for always being there for me. I love you. Barney, Nico, and I watch as Kat and Grace silently embrace. They stand like that for several long moments with their arms around each other, supporting each other. And honestly, I'm not a weepy dude, but it kind of brings a tear to my eye. It doesn't help that I'm imagining those three words leaving Grace's lips while she's looking at me, but that's neither here nor there. Grace glances at me. You just made that weird noise again. Barney claps me on the shoulder. He's all right. He sends me a conspiratorial wink. Go easy on him. It takes a while to get your sea legs. Kat and Grace do this confused head-cocking thing like, what the hell are you talking about? But Nico and I know exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about falling in love. Fuck you, man, I say gruffly, and Barney laughs. Chuckling, Nico says, remember to tack when the wind changes, bro. Don't want any slack in your sail. Fuck you too, Nix. Barney adds, and you gotta ride those monster waves, buddy. Head straight into that storm because a secret island paradise lies on the other side, but only for the sailor with balls big enough to ride it out. Excuse me, but when did this get-together become a scene from Moby Dick? Says Cat, exasperated. I look at Nico. So many jokes. He and Barney burst into laughter. Cat comes over and gives me a kiss on the cheek. She whispers into my ear, I'm so happy for you guys. Thanks, Cat. Also, I'll kill you if you fuck this up. I sigh. I know, Cat. Get in line. She pulls away, smiles at me, and follows Nico from the kitchen. I walk everyone to the front door, Grace at my side. Everyone says their goodbyes. If Barney hugs Grace a little too long, I pretend to ignore it and keep my shit-eating grin plastered on my face because that's what my girl wants me to do. She rewards me with a swift kiss on the lips as soon as she breaks away from Barney. He and I nod to each other, and then they're off. Grace and I stand at the door and watch them drive away in the Escalade, Barney behind the wheel. Once they're out of sight, she turns to me. I'm proud of you, Kong, she says softly, going up on her toes to kiss me again. I wrap my arms around her waist and drag her against me. I have no idea what you're talking about. She whispers, oh, you're good. I nuzzle her neck, inhaling the soft, warm scent of her skin. Do you want me to tuck you in now? If this tucking involves your outie and my innie, definitely yes. I'm talking about getting you settled for bed, horn dog. She smiles up at me, eyes shining. Me too. Is it normal to feel so happy it seems like you could float right off the floor? You've got a mind like a 14-year-old virgin who just discovered internet porn, I say sternly, trying my best to scowl, but when she takes my lower lip between her teeth, all thoughts of scowling are toast. What can I say? She whispers, rubbing her breasts against my chest. You give me a giant lady boner. I groan as she licks and nips my mouth, playfully touching her tongue to mine, but immediately withdrawing, only to slide her hand between my legs and grip my thickening dick. She purrs. And speaking of giant boners, I gather her hair in my hand and wrap it around my wrist. Then I use it like a leash to pull her head back. You're going to be the death of me, you know that? I growl against her arched neck, cupping her breast in my other hand. She answers breathlessly, maybe, but you'll die a happy man. She can't see it, but my smile is ruthless. In one swift move, I bend and throw her over my shoulder. Hey, she shouts, hitting me on the butt with her fists. Put me down. No can do, sunshine. I saunter out the front door, balancing her body with one hand on her hip and another spread across her ass. I head toward the guest house, enjoying the feel of her, listening to her grumbly protests and watching her feet kick in front of me as I walk barefoot over the grass. After a few minutes, she says, I'm getting lightheaded, so I stop and set her on her feet. She wobbles a little, finding her balance. You're strong. I'm not exactly light as a feather. I make like a bodybuilder and flex my biceps, growling. Oh, shit. We forgot the bags. I'll get 'em, I say, taking her hand and walking again. Why don't you take a bath or something? Get settled. I'll open a bottle of wine and we can chill for a bit before you go to bed. We walk for a minute, not saying anything, until Grace exhales a soft, wistful sigh. Uh-oh. What was that sigh? I don't know that sigh yet. Is that bad?
No, that was my pinch me because this can't be real sigh.
My chest puffs out all on its own. Didn't know it could do that. I squeeze her hand, smiling. In that case, I suppose I should make one too. Thoughtfully, she says,
It's funny, isn't it?
What is?
Life.
Funny ha-ha or funny strange? She shrugs, looking out toward the restless ocean, glinting in the pale moonlight.
Both. If anyone had told me last week that my condo would explode in a fireball and I'd be left homeless but wouldn't particularly care, I'd have written him a prescription for an antipsychotic.
I stop abruptly and pull her into my arms.
Looking down into her eyes, I vow, "You'll never be homeless, Grace. Not while I'm around. You'll always have a place to stay. With me." She shakes her head a little as if she can't believe it.
"I know," she whispers, gazing at me. "Which is just so weird. Don't you think this is a little weird? Us? This?"
She makes a motion with her finger, pointing between our chests. "No," I answer honestly. "I think it's amazing. To me, it just feels right." She nods.
"That's what I'm saying. How can this feel so right when everything else seems to be so wrong? Cat wanting to get pregnant, AJ's tumor, all my worldly possessions are destroyed, and yet I'm... This is terrible to say, but I'm really... happy,"
I say softly, finishing for her. When she nods silently, her eyes wide and full of wonder, my heart swells so big I think it will explode. But I don't want to get too sappy on her because it might scare her away, so I say matter-of-factly, "I told you, Slick.
Powerful spooge."
She groans in disgust and pushes on my chest.
"You're hopeless, you know that?"
Hopelessly in love, I think. My heart stops dead. Grace mistakes my sudden stillness and laughs.
"You make the best faces. Seriously, you look like you're having a stroke."
I open my mouth to answer, but nothing comes out. I've lost the power of speech. Love has literally rendered me speechless.
"Come on, Kong," says Grace, pulling at my hand. "Tuck me in and tell me a bedtime story."
She pulls me toward the guest house. All I can do is stumble along blindly behind her, dazed with joy, thinking, "Once upon a time, a boy fell in love with a beautiful princess." Looking back, that's the moment I should have known it was too good to last. Because in fairy tales with beautiful princesses, there's always an evil wizard to contend with, a witch casting a curse, a dangerous dragon to be slain. But I never could have guessed that all those terrible things would turn out to be me.
21. Grace. After showing me where everything is in the guest house, Brody brings me the bag of clothes from Kat and Chloe, runs me a bath, and opens a bottle of wine. "I could get used to this," I say contentedly, up to my neck in bubbles. Brody, sitting cross-legged on the floor beside the bathtub, pours me another glass of Cabernet. "Your wish is my command, my lady." He lifts his glass in a toast, and we both drink. It turns out swallowing a mouthful of wine while grinning is pretty tricky. Brody laughs at the liquid dribbling down both sides of my chin. "How's that drinking problem of yours coming along, Slick?" "Hole in my lip," I say, licking all around my mouth. He watches my tongue with the focused concentration of a lion hunkering down to stalk a meal. "Well," he says after a moment, his voice husky, "I should let you get to sleep." He stands, finishes off his wine in one big gulp, leans over the tub and kisses me brusquely on the forehead. As he turns to go, I ask bemusedly, "Is the sight of me immersed in bubbles offensive to you, Kong?" Halfway to the door, he stops. Over his shoulder, he says, "Yes, you're so hideous, I think I'm going to be sick." He adjusts his crotch. "And now I need to go rub one out to make myself feel better." Without looking back, he salutes. In a moment, the front door closes, and then I'm alone. I'm wet, naked, slippery with bubbles, and well on my way to tipsy. And the man just walked out on me. Either I'm losing my mojo, or Brody Scott is one hell of a gentleman. I soak until I'm pruned, and then dry off and wander naked into the bedroom with my glass of wine. I stand in the middle of the room, looking around at the elegant furnishings, fretting over all the to-do lists I should be making, all the things I'll need to deal with in the morning, but finally decide that tonight there's nothing I can do but try to get some sleep. So I finish my wine, crawl under the covers, turn out the lights, and lie in the dark listening to the muffled sound of waves crashing on the shore below and the wind whispering in the willows. Half an hour later, still wide awake, I get out of bed and retrieve my cell phone from my handbag on the dresser. Snuggled back under the covers, I dial Brody's number. He picks up on the first ring.
"If you're calling for a video of me stroking my cock, I'm not sending it," he says with a smile in his voice. "You've had enough of that, missy."
Not that I owe you an explanation, but just so you know, I deleted that. His voice turns apologetic.
"I wasn't trying to make you feel bad, I was only teasing. It's none of my business what you did before we were together."
We are quiet for a minute, just breathing, until I say, "So, we're together, but not having sex. And you can't stand to be in the same room with me when I'm naked. It's like we're married." His exhalation is ragged.
"You're relentless, you know that?"
"I'm relentless with everything I want badly."
"You want me badly?"
I smile. "I want you more than I want to survive to see another day." "Oh, wait. That sounds familiar. Where have I heard that before?" His voice sours.
"Har, har."
I hear some rustling in the background. "What are you doing?"
"Sitting up."
"Are you in bed?"
"Yep."
I stretch my legs beneath the covers. "Me too. And still naked, in case you were wondering." It goes quiet on the other end of the line.
"You sleep naked?"
"Always." He softly groans.
"Evil temptress."
I whisper, "Are you naked?" His chuckle is deep and amused.
"I don't want to ruin a beautiful fantasy for you, but I'm sitting here in my boxer briefs and socks watching TV."
"Take off the socks," I command, and he chuckles again.
"My feet are cold."
"They won't be in a minute."
"Why, you gonna get me so worked up my toes will be on fire?"
"Along with every other part of you, yes."
"Nah, I feel lazy. What if I just tell you I'm taking them off? Will that work?"
"No, off." He grumbles.
"Bossy friggin' princess."
But there's more rustling, and then he says,
"There. Satisfied?"
"Don't even get me started asking if I'm satisfied, Mr. Scott. I am most definitely not satisfied. Wait, did you just call me a princess?"
"Yeah, but not in a derogatory, you're so spoiled way. Like in you're a beautiful fairy tale way."
Why that should please me so much, I have no idea. "So I suppose you're the frog in this story?" Brody laughs.
"Definitely."
"So then I need to kiss you. A lot." His laughter turns into a low sigh.
"Hopefully. A lot, a lot."
The longing in that sigh makes me bite my lip. I say softly, "You're adorable, you know that." When he answers,
"Yeah, I do,"
I burst out laughing. And also very humble.
"Speaking of humble, turn on channel 518.
"What's on channel 518?
"If you turn it on, you'll find out, won't you?"
I roll my eyes, flick on the light on the nightstand, prop myself up against the pillows, and grab the remote. How the fuck does this thing work? There's about 4,000 buttons on it. He snorts.
"In your clinical opinion, is it estrogen that makes women unable to operate a television remote? I've always been curious."
"Careful there, Kong. Those are fightin' words."
Probably the same hormone that makes it impossible for you people to parallel park."
"Aha. You're lucky I just found the power button, or I'd be headed over to your place with a shotgun, my friend."
"Channel 518.
He pauses.
"You can get there by pushing the little buttons with the numbers."
"I've got it," I shout into the phone. muffled laughter. Grousing under my breath, I punch in the channel. Now I'm watching Harrison Ford and Annette Bening sharing a hug. I recognize the movie instantly. My heart starts thumping like mad. It's regarding Henry. This is my favorite part. Brody and I watch together in silence as Harrison and Annette retrieve their daughter from the elite boarding school they enlisted her in before her father's accident. A narcissistic, unethical attorney in Manhattan, he interrupted a robbery one night and was shot, leaving him with retrograde amnesia, his entire memory wiped clean. He had to learn who he was all over again, who his real friends were, what his relationship with his family used to be like. He didn't like what he found. You were watching this before I called? Brody pauses for a moment before he answers. This is the third time I've watched it in the past 3 days. My eyes sting. Because? Because it's the closest I can get to understanding what it might have been like for you. I've been doing web searches about memory loss, too, and I ordered some books from Amazon. I close my eyes and release the breath I didn't know I was holding. I'm sorry, he says quietly. I shouldn't have mentioned anything. No, I'm not upset with you. I'm just, a little blown away, to be honest. I know you probably don't want to talk about it. You can ask me anything, Brody. He must hear the raw emotion in my voice because he says gently, not if it hurts you. I'd rather stab out my own eyes than do anything to hurt you. And radical honesty, that's like 99.9% true. My hands are trembling. I swallow around the lump in my throat. I want you to know me, I whisper, my voice quaking. His slow exhalation is full of deliberation. Then he says, this accident you were in. I wait, staring at the ceiling, my stomach in knots. As he wrestles to find the right words, I suffer a pang of empathy for how hard this must be for him, dealing with a woman who may or may not remember him in the morning. Quite frankly, I wouldn't be up for it if the situation were reversed. Why expose yourself to that kind of possible trauma? Why volunteer to have your heart ripped out? I don't know where to start, he says finally, sounding miserable, so I take pity on him and help him out. I can't remember the actual accident itself. I dream about it. Well, you know, the dreams are always violent. Dark. But when I wake up, there are only snippets left, fractured pieces like a puzzle, different parts but nothing fits into a whole that makes sense. Mainly what I remember are the feelings the dream evokes, the terror. I pause to moisten my lips, allow my heartbeat to find a slower, more even rhythm. When I awoke in the hospital, no one knew who I was. My parents, their remains. There was a fire, a bad fire. It took a while for their bodies to be identified. Even the license plates on the car were melted beyond recognition. For 3 days I laid in a hospital bed, wondering what my name was. I didn't recognize my own face in the mirror. I didn't know my age or where I lived, if I had siblings or a boyfriend or a dog or allergies or was a virgin or knew how to drive. It was like waking up on an alien planet in a body that wasn't mine, with no knowledge of how I ended up there. I was just blank. Brody breathes out, fuck. I produce a shaky laugh. Yeah, fuck is right. It scares me now to think of it, but the brain is a funny thing. I thought I was blank, but I did have knowledge. It was just locked away. The pathways to access things had changed. Kind of like Jason Bourne in the Bourne Identity movies. Brody makes a joke. So you can kill people with your bare hands and make bombs out of toilet paper rolls, but you're not sure you know how to do it? Maybe.
I haven't tried either of those things now that you mention it, but the idea is the same. For instance, math.
Math?
Yeah, math. That's how the doctors first started testing my memory. If certain areas of your brain are destroyed or affected by severe trauma, your ability to problem-solve, like long division as an example, can be destroyed. In my case, I could easily complete an algebraic equation. I just didn't know how I knew how to do it. The memory of learning math was gone, the knowledge of understanding math was gone, but the ability itself remained. Put a piece of paper with a mathematical formula in front of me, I could correctly solve it. Ask me to describe what I'd solved, I'd have no clue. Brody's, dude, sounds so deeply impressed, I have to chuckle. I know, it's a little esoteric, but that's how it was for me with a lot of things. As it turned out, I did know how to do math and drive and most other things I'd learned by rote or with muscle memory, like swimming. I just couldn't remember what I knew and didn't know. It was so frustrating, I can't even describe it. Everything had to be relearned, rediscovered, reintroduced, but some things refused to come back. Some parts of my brain are still locked away to me, even now. Most likely they always will be. There's a moment of fraught silence as Brody digests what I've said. Then he asks,
"Which parts?"
I chew a little piece of skin on the inside of my cheek. My parents. I don't remember them at all. Or my childhood. School. Friends. Growing up in San Francisco. The life I remember started when I was 18, when I opened my eyes in a strange bed, in a strange room, wearing an ugly blue gown that tied in the back, hooked up to beeping machines, with an old nurse with kind brown eyes leaning over me and asking if I could hear her.
"Don't move," says Brody, his voice tight. "I'm coming over."
He hangs up before I can say another word. In 2 minutes, the front door flies open. I'm already sitting up in bed. "You didn't even put a shirt on," I manage to get out before he's on me. He takes me flat to the mattress and crushes me to his chest, the covers smashed between our bodies.
"Baby,"
he says, choked, his face pressed to my neck.
"Oh, God, baby."
He's called me slick. He's called me sweetheart. He's called me sunshine and princess and witch face and who knows what else. But hearing him call me baby in that wrecked tone of voice, his big, strong body trembling with emotion, rips down any barrier I might have tried to erect between us. I cling to him and let the tears come, hot and silent on my cheeks.
"I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry."
He keeps saying it over and over, a litany of regret that seems so genuine it's almost like he feels at fault. I press my cheek to his and whisper into his ear, "It's better now. You make me better." I hug him hard, my arms thrown around his shoulders.
"This makes it better."
When he lifts his head and gazes down at me, his eyes are wet. Seeing his emotion moves me so much it hurts my chest. I skim a fingertip over the fringe of his lower lashes. He squeezes his eyes shut, almost as if he's hiding. "What is it?" I ask, because I know it's something more. He rests his forehead against mine. It's hot, like he has a fever. His voice a cracking whisper, he says,
"You don't believe in confessions, remember?"
But I do believe in radical honesty. He blinks open his eyes. They're dark and full of pain. Tortured. My heart beats faster. "Brody, what is it?" His lips part. Staring down at me with an anguished expression, he blurts,
"I'm crazy about you, Grace. I'm just fucking gone."
Heat suffuses me, flushing my face, my chest, the tips of my fingers. I stare at him, knowing he's telling me the truth, knowing, too, that this unexpected admission is tied inextricably to what I've told him about the accident,
that somehow the two things are bound together, a knot I can sense but don't understand.
Please don't let that turn you off, but I can't not say it. It's what's in my heart. I know it's fast.
Someone I love once told me that when these things are real, they happen fast. I interrupt softly, stroking his face. He inhales a ragged breath.
Really? Who?
I smile. Cat. And besides, it's not that fast. We've known each other for a year and a half, as you keep reminding me. Honestly, I'm surprised you didn't tell me this, like, 17 months ago. You've been making moon eyes at me the whole time, you big sap. He threads his fingers into my hair and kisses me, a deep, hot kiss that leaves us both panting softly. His erection is trapped between us, insistently poking into my hip.
I am a sap, he says huskily. I'm a big, drippy ball of goo. For you.
I smile. That sounds unhygienic. He doesn't smile back at my joke. Nuzzling my neck, he whispers,
If I said I wanted to spend the night over here, would you be able to keep your hands to yourself?
No.
Well, tough. 'Cause I'm staying. I don't want you to have to sleep by yourself tonight.
I exhale a ragged breath. I always spend the night alone, Brody. He kisses my neck, my shoulder, my jaw. Then he softly kisses me on the lips again, but this time it's tender instead of passionate.
There's a first time for everything, Slick.
He reaches across me and turns out the light. Then he rolls to his side, taking me with him. Lying on top of the covers, he pulls me to his chest so we're back to front with the sheets between us, spooning, his legs drawn up behind mine, his arm under my head, the other arm wrapped around my middle. Into my hair he murmurs,
Look on the bright side. You'll finally find out if you snore.
I don't snore, I whisper, smiling. He snuggles into me, burrowing his face deeper into my hair, and makes a low masculine sound in his throat. He finds my hand and threads his fingers through mine. Then he sighs, deeply and quietly, his body warm and heavy, relaxing against me. Just as I'm about to drift off into sleep, Brody whispers,
Thank you.
For what? I ask groggily. A gentle kiss on the back of my neck, the barest brush of his lips against my skin.
I wasn't talking to you, baby. Go to sleep.
And so, lulled by the deep, even sound of his breathing, I do. 22. Waking up the next morning feels like being reborn. It's early, so early the birds aren't even up yet. The barest wash of color is lifting the sky beyond the windows from deep sapphire to pearl gray. I inhale, smelling the warm, pleasant musk of sleepy male. Brody is lying on his back beside me, his arm under my neck. I'm draped over him like another blanket, one leg thrown over his body, my arm across his chest. His bare, beautiful chest. In sleep, he's somehow even more gorgeous, all tousled hair and golden skin, his square jaw shadowed with stubble. When I touch my fingertip to the cursive letters tattooed across his chest, he shifts drowsily, mumbles something unintelligible, and then with a soft exhalation falls still. Beneath his boxer briefs, he's hard. Looking at his erection, I bite my lip. It's just sitting there like a dare, bold and beautiful, taunting me. I have to touch it. I literally cannot not touch it. My fingers are already creeping downward over his chest of their own will. Using the barest possible pressure, I trace the outline of the head. Brody makes a soft sound but doesn't stir. His breathing doesn't change. Is this wrong? I think, stroking the head of his cock through the cotton. When his cock reacts with a welcoming jerk against my fingers, I decide his penis has a mind of its own, rights of its own, and if Brody is too busy sleeping, Mr. Throbby and I are going to take this opportunity to become better acquainted. I lightly wrap my hand around his erection. Eager to become friends, it pulses against my palm. Sleeping Beauty doesn't move. Emboldened, I slowly stroke my hand down the length of him, all the way to the base, careful not to make any sudden moves. His cock is thick, and as hard as steel. He could knock over a building with it. At least a multi-unit apartment complex, anyway. And it's frisky. No sooner have I gently moved my hand to cup his balls than I get another pulse from it, this one stronger. You want my mouth, don't you, big boy? Slowly, with minute movements of my body, I lift my leg from over Brody's. Then I inch down the mattress, holding my breath and keeping an eye on Brody's face. He's still blissfully in la-la land, so I keep heading south. When I'm eye to eye with his crotch, I lean over and softly kiss his cock through the cotton. Straining against the fabric, the vein on the underside throbs. I kiss the head, the shaft, nuzzling my nose along the length of him. Mmm. Brody turns his head on the pillow. I freeze. After a moment, when nothing happens, I slip my fingers through the opening in the front of his briefs. Warm skin, the softest anywhere on his body. With tiny movements and light pressure, I stroke my fingers over it. Brody shifts his legs but doesn't wake. His cock instantly pulses against my fingers, begging for my tongue. So I have to oblige. It's the polite thing to do. I lean over, spread the opening in his briefs farther apart, and close my lips over the throbbing vein just beneath the head of his cock. Brody makes a sound, something like a moan or a plea. Whatever it is, it makes my heart take off at a gallop. I want to hear that sound again. I slip the engorged head into my mouth. Reflexively, Brody's hips move, pushing him deeper. The moan I'm rewarded with this time is lower in register, longer, and so fucking sexy my nipples harden. I'm getting wet between my legs. I slide his cock farther into my mouth, sucking on the shaft. He's hot against my tongue. He tastes like the ocean. Then a hand fists into my hair.
Grace.
Brody's voice is thick with sleep and desire. I glance up. He's staring down at me, his head lifted off the pillow, a flush creeping up his neck. Slowly and deliberately, I swirl my tongue around the head of his cock. His eyes flare, his lips part, but no sound comes out. His hand tightens in my hair. I close my fingers around the thickness of his shaft at the base, and then, looking up at him, take his cock all the way down my throat.
Oh, fuck.
He whispers, shuddering. Good morning, Mr. Scott. When I slide my mouth up toward the head again, he fists his other hand in my hair and makes a noise like a growl. It's a fine morning, isn't it? Sucking on the head of his cock, I stroke my hand up and down the shaft. Wet from my mouth, hard and pulsing, it slips through my fingers. He sucks in a sharp breath. All the muscles in his abdomen stand out. He says my name again, this time followed by a husky command.
Faster.
I'm nothing if not accommodating, so as I continue to suck and lick the head of his cock, I stroke my hand faster up and down, squeezing, my fingers curled tight. Brody starts to fuck my mouth, flexing his pelvis in time with my strokes, watching me, watching my mouth, the movements of my tongue.
Yes, baby,
he whispers, straining against my lips.
Exactly like that. That's so fucking good. Your mouth feels amazing.
When I moan around his cock because I'm so turned on, he demands harshly,
"Let me see that beautiful pussy."
Using my free hand, I shove the covers off me, exposing my naked breasts and body. He hisses in a breath.
"Show me how wet you are, baby. Touch yourself. Let me taste you."
I've officially died and gone to heaven. I slip my fingers between my legs. I'm soaked. My clit is swollen, so exquisitely sensitive I whine when my fingers brush over it.
"Give it to me,"
Brody demands. When I lift my hand from between my legs, Brody grabs my wrist, sits up a few inches, and hungrily sucks my wet fingers into his mouth. We both moan. He licks my fingers, greedy for my taste, which is so erotic I moan again. When he's finished licking my fingers clean, he puts his hand around my throat. His other hand, still fisted in my hair, rhythmically fucking my mouth, he lightly squeezes my neck.
"So beautiful,"
he whispers when I shiver, aroused out of my mind by that small gesture of dominance.
"You're so beautiful, sweetheart. Look at you. Look at how perfect you are."
His expression is fierce, concentrated, hard. His hand tightens around my throat. I slip my fingers back between my legs and frantically stroke my throbbing clit.
"Don't you dare come yet,"
he says softly.
"If you come before me, I'll punish you."
"Oh, God, yes, please, yes, punish me. I'm very bad, and you should punish me now." Brody's husky chuckle sends a thrill through my body.
"You want that, don't you?"
I close my eyes and moan around his cock, building fast toward climax. His voice gets gruffer, lower, darker.
"You want me to restrain you, Grace? You want me to tie you up?"
My nipples are so hard, so sensitive. My pulse is a wild, thundering roar in my ears. In one sudden move, Brody sits up, flips me onto my back, and straddles my chest. Hard and wet from my mouth, his cock rests between my breasts. He wraps his hands around my wrists and stares down at me with a look of lust so unleashed it steals my breath.
"Answer me."
I whisper,
"Yes." "Stay here."
I swallow, nod, and stay perfectly still as he crawls off me and goes into the other room. Not even daring to lift my head from the pillow, I lie there and breathe through the waves of heat washing over me. It seems as if I can feel every nerve in my body, all my muscles and bones, the air being sucked from my lungs to feed all the tiny capillaries. Brody returns. He stands in the doorway looking at me. He's removed his briefs. A length of rope dangles from one hand. When he hears my soft moan, he smiles. Dragging the rope through his hands, he walks slowly to the edge of the bed, never taking his gaze from mine.
"What are we gonna do with you?"
he muses.
"Waking me up like that when you knew you were supposed to behave?"
My chest rises and falls in quick, uneven bursts. He strolls toward the bed, watching my face, gauging my reaction to his approach. Then he stops beside the bed, his erection jutting out, straining toward me.
"Up on your knees, facing me."
In one whip-crack motion, I do exactly as he commands and kneel on the mattress in front of him.
"So eager,"
he whispers, brushing my hair over my shoulder. His hand lingers a moment, steadying me. The pause is excruciating. My heartbeat is like a hummingbird's. Brody leans down and kisses my neck.
"Are you gonna be quiet?"
I nod vigorously. He kisses the wildly fluttering pulse at the base of my throat.
"Good. Because your little noises will make me come too fast."
He reaches around me, bends my arms so they're crossed over my back at my waist, and winds the rope around my wrists. He gives the rope a little tug to tighten the knot, and I gasp. He tilts his head and looks at me in warning from the corner of his eye. Biting my lip, I look down. Moving agonizingly slowly, he winds the rope back around my torso, just under my breasts, looping it around his hands. It's a soft rope, the color of straw, about a quarter inch thick, perfectly suited to the task. He passes it around my body and crisscrosses it between my breasts, so they're lifted and separated, blatantly on display. Then he ties another knot just above my belly button, and I'm bound. His expression is intensely focused. I can tell he loves what he sees, and also notice his concern that he hasn't bound me too tightly as he runs his finger under the rope, testing the tautness against my skin.
Okay?
He asks, whisper soft. I moisten my lips and nod.
If it gets uncomfortable, tell me right away.
I nod again, my pulse flying, tension rising and rising under my skin. Brody pushes me gently down against the mattress and stares down at me with this incredible combination of passion, possession, and protectiveness in his eyes, and it's all I can do not to groan aloud. No one has ever looked at me the way he does. No one has ever made me feel the way he does. I know we're crossing over into new territory, that this kind of emotional intimacy never goes hand in hand with physical intimacy for either of us, and it scares the shit out of me, but also makes me so elated I feel drugged. Adrenaline crashes through me until I'm trembling all over, quaking with need and emotion.
"It's all right," says Brody, watching me with soft eyes. "I'm here. You're safe. Just breathe."
He settles a hand low on my belly.
"Spread your legs for me, baby."
I part my knees. He runs his hand slowly up my thighs and nudges my legs wider apart. Then he stands there looking down at the most private part of me, his cock twitching. He gently pinches my folds between two fingers. I close my eyes, arching into his hand.
"Sweet, beautiful girl,"
he rasps, stroking the rough pad of his thumb over my clit, dipping it down lower to press inside me.
"You're so pink and sweet here. So soft. So wet."
I'm starting to sweat. The combination of his words, the husky tone of his voice, the rope chafing my skin, and how gentle he's being all combined to make me desperately hot. I'm burning up. He drags me by my hips to the edge of the bed so my bottom is hanging over by a few inches. He kneels between my legs, digs his hands into the flesh of my ass, and licks my pussy. My sucked-in breath is loud, but it must not count because Brody ignores it. He kisses me there as he would my mouth. A gently swirling motion and constant suction. A deliberate sweep of his tongue over the swollen bud of my clit. I strain against my bindings, panting, my head thrown back, my trembling legs thrown over his shoulders, listening to all the noises he's making, the wet sucking sounds and deep pleased grumbles, trying to hold back the scream building inside my chest. Then he presses two fingers inside me and lightly scrapes his teeth against my clit. I jerk. A ragged moan tears from my lips before I can stop it. Brody reaches up and pinches my nipple. Hard. "Please," I whisper, desperate for release. His fingers gentler. He strokes his thumb back and forth over my throbbing nipple. Suckling my clit, he presses his fingers deeper inside me. I helplessly rock against his mouth. He grabs onto the knot above my belly and uses the rope to pull me even closer. He reaches up with both hands and squeezes my breasts, rhythmically pinching my nipples. Losing it, I begin to buck against his mouth.
I'll spank this pussy so hard if you come before you're told.
He goes right back to eating me as soon as those words are spoken, but it's too late. I'm there. With a loud, wavering scream, I come. Brody rears up and shoves his hard cock deep inside me. I convulse around it, thrashing and moaning like a mad woman, my thighs drawn up around his waist. I hear him cursing, feel his hands on my neck and breasts, holding me down, but I'm barely aware of anything else because he feels so goddamn good it's unreal.
"That's your cock, baby," he growls into my ear. "Come on it."
I do, over and over, crying out his name, until my legs are jelly and the pulsing in my core finally slows, and then stops. I float for a while, almost disconnected from my body, somewhere peaceful inside my head. When I come back to myself, Brody is still on top of me, still in me, his arms tensed and his heart pounding hard against mine. I blink up at him. He mutters,
"Oops."
I turn my head to his arm and weakly start to laugh.
"You're gonna need to give me a mulligan here, Slick. That was an accident."
I laugh harder.
"It's kinda funny how every time we do this, you end up laughing."
I kiss his arm. Funny ha-ha or funny strange? He starts to withdraw from my body and I groan. "No."
"Yes."
"It's too late. The 30-day thing is toast. You already screwed the pooch."
"You should never refer to yourself as a pooch, beautiful. You're anything but."
With a regretful grunt, he pulls out of me. "Oh, God, I hate you right now." He tisks.
"Careful, Slick. I still haven't punished you for coming yet."
I freeze.
"What?"
He stands, beautiful and naked, legs spread at the edge of the bed. Gazing down at me with heated eyes and a mysterious smile, he pulls me up by the knot on my stomach.
"We'll get to that later. Open your mouth."
With one hand on his erection and the other around my jaw, Brody guides my lips to his cock, still wet from being inside me.
"Clean me off,"
he whispers.
"Every drop."
I lap at him like an obedient puppy as he watches me, his breathing erratic. I lick him base to tip, swallowing every so often, tasting myself.
"The rope's still okay, sweetheart?"
"Yes." He digs his hands into my hair.
"Good. Now suck."
When the head of his cock nudges the back of my throat, I make a little noise that sends a shiver through Brody's body. His eyes drift halfway shut.
"I want to come in your mouth. If you don't want that, tell me now so we can do something else."
I suck harder.
"That's my girl,"
he whispers, flexing his hips. My toes dig into the carpet as he starts a slow, repetitive thrusting, slightly deeper with each push. I love how he holds my head motionless, how helpless I am to use my hands or even move. All I can do is submit to him as he sets the pace and uses my mouth for his own pleasure.
"I'm close,"
he says, breathing hard.
"God, sweetheart, you're so fucking..."
He cuts off with a fractured groan. He pumps hard into my mouth several more times, his fingers digging into my scalp, and then with a shout throws his head back and comes. And comes. And comes. He starts to lose his balance, or the strength in his legs, because his knees buckle. He curses. Without releasing my head, he takes a knee on the mattress so he's supporting all the weight of my upper body with his hands behind my head. He stares down at me, his face red, his lips parted, his eyes dazed. I swallow, breathing through my nose. Brody moans as the muscles in my throat contract around him.
"Grace,"
he gasps, shuddering.
"Grace."
I swallow again. He plants a hand on the mattress and eases me down, keeping his cock in my mouth and a hand under my neck, until finally I'm flat on my back and he's balanced over me, stroking my throat and softly groaning as I continue to suck and swallow everything he's giving me. I'm bound, helpless, completely at his mercy, yet because of what I see in his eyes, I've never felt more powerful in my life. When his body is no longer racked with tremors and his breathing has slowed, he carefully pulls out of my mouth. He releases the knot on my stomach, unwinds the rope from around my body, rolls me to my side so he can untie the knot at my wrists, and then tosses the rope to the floor.
Come here, baby.
He gathers me in his arms. He rolls us around so I'm on top of him, my head resting on his chest, and then starts to massage my neck, shoulders, and arms.
Are you okay?
Move.
He chuckles. The sound reverberates through my head.
I'll take that as a yes.
He gently rubs one wrist and then the other. I let him handle me with no resistance, my muscles limp. He presses a kiss to the center of my palm. We're quiet for a while. I drift, physically and mentally drained, taking support from the heat and strength of his body beneath me. The rhythm of his breath soothes me on a deep, visceral level, so in a few short minutes I'm almost asleep. Until Brody whispers,
"Time for church, sweetheart."
I lift my head and blink up at him, and he smiles.
"I know you've already seen God once this morning, but a second time never hurts."
"Your ego is only matched by your terrible sense of humor, Mr. Scott."
"And your beauty is only matched by your gymnastic tongue, Slick."
"Yes, I'm a very cunning linguist." Eyes wide, Brody asks,
"Did you just misquote a line from Tomorrow Never Dies?"
I lift my brows. If you're about to tell me that's another one of your favorite movies, I'm about to start believing in fate.
"You like James Bond?"
"Like? No. I don't like James Bond. I love James Bond." He considers me seriously for a moment. Then he narrows his eyes.
"I'm not going to get too excited because next you'll probably say you like Daniel Craig best in the role."
I scoff. "Sean Connery all the way, baby. That time when he was dancing with the girl in Thunderball, and he spun her around so the bad guy would shoot her in the back instead of him. Classic asshole move. I actually clapped at that part." Brody drops his head back against the mattress. He starts to laugh, softly at first, and then with more volume when I add sourly, "But don't even get me started on Timothy Dalton."
"No,"
he says, squeezing me, his voice husky, his embrace tight.
"I wouldn't dare."
23. "And then what happened?" "Then we went surfing again. It was as cold as Christmas in Antarctica. I kept expecting an iceberg to float by with some polar bears on it. After that, he made me breakfast. And when I say he, I mean Magda, his housekeeper, who should have her own cooking show. She's that good. Then he drove me into town so I could go look at the building and get my car." On the other end of the phone, Kat moans.
"Oh, God, how bad was it? Was there anything left?"
Standing at the window of my office in Beverly Hills, I look out into the February sky. It's crystal blue, not a cloud in sight, cheerfully refusing to admit we're in the middle of winter. Security wouldn't let me up to the floor. My floor and the two above have both been completely evacuated. All the elevators have been shut down due to safety concerns. It's not known yet if the blast affected the lift mechanisms. So a lot of folks are displaced. And where my and Mr. Leibowitz's condos used to be, there's a gigantic black hole. There's debris everywhere that the investigators are going through. I sigh. I'm sure they'll find my vibrator collection scattered in a million little pieces over the doggy walk. Or worse, totally intact.
I smile at the image of Linda Conley, the high-strung building manager, having a fainting spell when confronted by my XXL hot pink dildo protruding from a shrub somewhere on the grounds. Then I think of poor Mr. Leibowitz and feel bad.